I speak to you in the name of the God of Abraham and Isaac. Amen. When Joshua DeShaney was 4 years old, his father beat him senseless. Joshua did not die, but he suffered brain damage so severe that he spent the rest of his life in an institution for the profoundly retarded, and then ended his life in the foster care of a loving family. Ordinarily, his story would not have been widely heard. Other children have suffered the same or worse. Governor Ron DeSantis recently signed Jordan's Law following the beating and death of Jordan Belliveau here in Tampa. But Joshua's mother brought a lawsuit against the county in Wisconsin where she lived and against its Department of Social Services. She claimed its officials had failed to intervene to protect Joshua from violence at his father's hands. Her lawsuit actually made its way to the United States Supreme Court, where a majority of the justices said, "Sorry, Joshua's story is tragic indeed, but nevertheless the state had no constitutional duty to protect Joshua against his father's violence." Justice Harry Blackmun dissented. Poor Joshua, victim of repeated attacks by an irresponsible, bullying, cowardly, and intemperate father, and abandoned by officials who placed him in a dangerous predicament and who knew or learned what was going on, and yet did essentially nothing except dutifully recorded these incidents in their files. When Isaac was but a child, his father almost killed him. Isaac did not die, but he was taken up a mountain, bound, laid on an altar, and traumatized beyond imagining. Ordinarily, his story would not have been widely heard. Other children suffered worse. Child sacrifice was practiced in the ancient world. But the storytellers of the Hebrews remembered this traumatic non-sacrifice, and their story made its way into the sacred writings. After the story of the creation of the world and the giving of the law on Sinai, the binding of Isaac is called the Akedah in Hebrew. After this, the creation and the giving of the law, the binding of Isaac has received more commentary than any other story in the Hebrew Bible. Many commentators have tried to put a good face on a savage story. In the free association so typical of rabbinic storytelling, Isaac consents, or Isaac is killed or remade by God, or Isaac tells his father about the ram in the thicket. But a more honest response to this tale would be, "Poor Isaac." A 7-year-old girl staggered her parents one day. "Mommy, do you love God more than me?" They discovered she'd been digging in a rich vein of Jewish and Christian tradition and had been pondering this story of Abraham and Isaac. Her terrifying question parts the theological conundrum, like Justice Blackmun's does the legal conundrum, with a kind of raw, intuitive, helpless lament, "Poor Isaac." We have come on this Lord's Day to a rare and troubling occasion. The church has given us one of the greatest stories in the Bible to read and hear and contemplate. We are told it is a test. After these things, God tested Abraham. "Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and offer him as a burnt offering." It is a story that escaped from the mythic past of a people just getting to know their God. It's a terrifying story of obedience and abuse. And it marks the day the laughter died, for Isaac means he laughs. Then why not let the story die? Why keep telling it? Why must we honor a man who abused his child in this way? What kind of God would command his chosen one to kill his son? Have we come no further than Iphigenia, whose father Agamemnon killed her to appease the gods? Why not leave poor Isaac in peace? Why not leave poor Joshua in peace? In fact, his father was convicted of child abuse. Can't that be the end of the story? Why is it necessary to use up energy just to cry helplessly, poor Isaac? And why is it necessary to keep binding Isaac again and again and again? I can't really think of a really good reason to keep telling this tale, except that we have to tell it. We have to tell the story and confront it over and over. Because when we pass on this story, we stand at the precipitous chasm between obeying and loving. Obeying and loving. We face the peril, like Abraham faced, of pleasing God by using, abusing others. And we bear in our own souls the injustice of God's mercy and the merciless shadow over the covenant. Isaac was the child of the covenant, the child of God's promise. Every society believes itself menaced by two enemies, children and strangers. They both threaten the order of things, one from within, the other from without, outside. Children haven't yet learned the rules. Children don't yet know the boundaries. Children ask too many questions. My father, spoke Isaac, behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Children, whether Isaac or Joshua, are too often sacrificed to the inchoate fear and hostility of the world and place. Even God was slow to intervene. Sadly for Joshua, no one intervened. It is telling, it is really telling, that the story is remembered as the Akedah, the binding of Isaac. The threat of being killed was traumatic enough. Joshua DeShaney's injuries were tragic enough. But it is being bound, controlled, being in custody, being unable to protect oneself, that is the true terror of the story. The real terror of domestic abuse resides in the boundedness of the victim, unable to get away or feeling unable to get away. When we witness black men being killed by police, the most terrifying thing about these deaths is that they happen while the black men are in custody. They are bound, unable to protect themselves. Sadly, the binding is still happening. But enough of the theology of terror. Though our journey takes us to the top of Mount Moriah with Isaac, it finally brings us to another mountain top and another son. In its three New Testament references, the binding of Isaac is never actually explicitly applied to Jesus. But the binding of Isaac is one of the readings appointed for the great vigil of Easter, and we do not skip over it in our lectionary year A, like we have this year. So somehow even this story must frame even the lives of those who follow Jesus. However, with Jesus, the story is critically different. When Jesus was a man, not a boy, he was killed, not by his father, but by others. Some even said he went to his death knowingly. Ordinarily, his story would not have been heard. Other men were executed and their memories forgotten. But Jesus' friends told this tale. There was no ram, they said. God did not intervene in time. And against all who wished it were not so. The friends of Jesus insisted the sacrifice was carried out. And perhaps they should have lamented poor Jesus. When I first came across Joshua DeShaney's story, I couldn't figure out why it troubled me so much, other than the obvious human tragedy. It was just one of hundreds of cases I stumbled through in studying constitutional law in law school. But Justice Blackmun's dissent was eloquent, but impotent to undo the harm or right the wrong. Then one day it struck me, Joshua is the Hebrew for Jesus. I don't understand the suffering of Jesus any more than the suffering of Joshua or the suffering of Isaac. They all had done to them terrible things. The child on the mountain was scarred for the rest of his life. The child in Wisconsin was beaten senseless, and the man in Jerusalem was killed. The rest of Isaac's story is a ragged and feeble tale. He lived out his days, a conduit of God's promise, no doubt shaken with post-traumatic stress disorder, married his wife Rebekah, had two sons, Jacob and Esau, was deceived by his wife, tricked by his son Jacob, and coping in a kind of shock with the nightmare of his trip up the mountain with his father. Nor was there much hope in the life that Joshua DeShaney faced, except for the fact that his father could not abuse him any longer. Joshua lived endless nights and days of brain-damaged existence, brightened by the love of foster parents, Richard and Ginger Brom of Muskego, Wisconsin. Joshua DeShaney died in November 2015 at the age of 36. But when no one noticed, God unbound Jesus and let him go. I don't know why God allowed Isaac to be bound up and laid on the altar by his father. I wish I knew where God was when Joshua was beaten so savagely. However, I do believe that God was present there when Jesus was bound to the cross and died under the sun in Jerusalem. I also believe that God was present when Jesus undid the death inflicted on him. And if I believe that, I will try to believe that God is not absent even when suffering continues. Meanwhile, let us resolve to do the work of unbinding, and not ever allow terror to be inflicted on those who are bound. Amen.